That's Doodlin', the final track on Horace Silver's 1954 album, Horace Silver and the Jazz Messengers. It's a jazz standard, just so you know. The noted composer, arranger, and bandleader is on piano, Hank Mobley on tenor sax, Kenny Dorham, we heard from him yesterday, on trumpet, Doug Watkins on bass, and Art Blakey, the great Art Blakey, on drums. Horace Silver, an undisputed defining force in jazz piano, died on June the 18th, 2014, in New Rochelle, New York. He was 85 years old, but by then, he had certainly accounted for himself. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's as if our discussion yesterday was was actually being paid attention to. Today, President Obama commuted the sentences of 61 prisoners for low-level drug offenses. Now, that fed into the theme of yesterday's program, in which we talked about the fact that this concern by Hillary Clinton, particularly, she has raised this as her latest reason for people to vote for her, is that we should be very scared about who will be the next president, because the next president appoints people to a person to the U.S. Supreme Court to replace Antonin Scalia. But my point was that shouldn't bother us at all, because it doesn't matter whether a Republican president or a Democratic president appoints a justice to the U.S. Supreme Court, really. For the vast majority of people out here, especially people of color, the Supreme Court has its own nasty history, and we can't expect it to expunge itself of that history anytime soon. The fact is that what is happening in the lower courts, that's where the legal genocide is occurring, and that's where we ought to train our eyes. The president pretty much endorses this with the commutation of 61 sentences today for low-level drug offenses, but he will not link it to Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton. And it is, in fact, as I discussed just yesterday, it was Bill Clinton's drug policy and the building of the prison, the modern-day prison industrial complex that has more than 2.2 million people in jail and prisons in this country. It is Bill Clinton that we have to thank for the fact that we have so many prisons, which, of course, having been built with federal funds going to the states, must now be occupied. And the question then becomes, well, how do we keep them occupied? And you keep them occupied with something called determinate sentencing. You're not only going to be going to jail, and jail is certain, and it depends on your color in this country, even there, whether you get off or you get jailed. So here we go. Yet another reminder that there is no such thing as an unconnected political policy. And now both Bill and Hill are clearly distancing themselves from this horrible thing. I call it a crime against humanity. The commutation of sentences for low-level drug offenses. You don't need to ask whether these people are of the working class or the working poor class. You don't need to ask that. You don't need to ask it. You just know. But this is what she needs to be confronted with. They can talk about it in academic terms now. But today, Hillary Clinton goes to Harlem. Why? Because the primary, the Democratic primary in New York comes up soon. And she will need, of course, those lovely dark people to vote for her and put her closer to the presidency. And guess what? They will. Her acolytes, the officials of the Democratic Party operating in Harlem and in Queens and in Brooklyn and in other areas across the state where you would find large populations of people of color have already begun to do their jobs, not at all caring about what exactly this woman's history has been or why it is that people ought to be very reticent about a vote for Hillary Clinton. Which brings me to the topic today. And the topic today is the moment in time that we are in, the historical moment in time, and it is the rise of the kakistocrats. Big word, but with a very, very simple meaning. The worst possible people have presented themselves as qualified leaders of this country. All they need is your, at least your, technically all they need is your vote. But there's no question that we have entered the era of the kakistocrats. And kakistocracy is supplanting democracy. Well, let's look at that word, kakistocracy. It comes from the Greek radical, the Greek derivation, kakistos, meaning bad, really, really bad. It's the superlative of bad, meaning it's the worst. And the krasi part means government, form of government. So a kakistocracy would be the rule by the worst possible elements of your society. That's what we are about to experience. We have begun to get a taste of it, but no matter how this election turns out, that's what we will have. It certainly won't be a democratic process, because as we've been discussing, this business of the delegates and the superdelegates and the unbound and the bound and the pledged and the unpledged and all these other ways of describing a process that ignores and, in fact, countermands the will and dictates of the people. People think they are voting. They think they are voting and that their votes mean something. And we have been discovering over and over again the multiple ways in which both the Democratic and Republican parties, the duopoly, had put in place a fail-proof system to countermand the popular will. If they want to recognize the votes of the people, they will. And if they don't want to, they won't. And then this process is repeated again in the general election, where the people will once again be told, this is, you know, voting is the bedrock of this democracy, this democratic form of government that we have, that the people control the throttle and brake of government, the people exercise the will, and the system listens to them, etc., etc. All that hogwash. And we know that there, too, we have built-in systems that countermand the will of the people. In fact, it is not the people who elect the president at all, or the vice president. It is something, yet another complication, another impediment called the Electoral College. They're the people. We'll get into that in greater detail on another day. But it is another system that elects the president and the vice president of the United States. And you're thinking, well, we're voting. So it must be our votes that are doing this. It must be what is meant by the democratic process. No, it isn't a democratic process at all. Now, if you look at what we have as the people who are considered the finalists in this primary process, the finalists on the Democratic side and on the Republican side, it makes you bilious. It makes you say, is this the best we got? Is this really the is this the best? Is this what we have? Are these people the people, any one of whom is presumed to be qualified to occupy the White House and rule literally this country, to call the shots? This is it. This is the best. This is the best we have. Well, look, let me just give you an idea. Just last night, of course, CNN still not at all giving up on those millions of dollars it anticipates getting in campaign ads from Donald Trump, held a town hall. I guess they're tired of using the word debate, which is, of course, no debate at all. But this is kind of a Q&A, the classic interview Q&A style, all right? So Anderson Cooper is the host. You know Anderson Cooper. And it was interesting. You know, I pay attention to all the ironies. Here is Anderson Cooper, the great-grandson of Cornelius Vanderbilt, the son of Gloria Vanderbilt, a multimillionaire himself, interviewing the billionaire candidate. Okay? And we're supposed to glean from this exchange, this deep exchange, we're supposed to glean something that has to do with the presumed concern by the people about where this country is headed. We're supposed to get out of this exchange, and this exchange here that I'm going to share with you is with Donald Trump. And why Donald Trump? Because Donald Trump is the front runner in the Republican wing of this bird, this flightless bird. He's the Republican wing, and he's winning. This is the thing. Donald Trump is winning. Winning all over the place. He can't stop winning. He himself says that over and over and over again. How winning he is. He's a very winning guy. And because he's winning, and because he is very, very wealthy, and because he knows how to cut deals, he should be the president of the United States. And although the media are acting as if they are just, I mean, they are just nonplussed with this whole idea, they nevertheless created this monster. They had a direct hand in creating the whole crop of them. And so the people are stuck between the lesser of two evils and the evil of several lessers. But let's listen to this exchange, this really insightful and deep intellectual exchange between Donald Trump and fellow multimillionaire Anderson Cooper.
And welcome back. We're talking to Donald Trump a week before the Wisconsin primary. Voters asking Republican candidates the questions that matter to them, looking for answers to help them decide. Before we go back to the audience, I want to ask you a question that I asked to Senator Cruz as well. More than 6 months ago, you pledged to support the Republican nominee, whoever that may be. A lot has changed since then. It sounded, when I was pressing Senator Cruz on it, sounded like he was saying he'd have a hard time supporting somebody who went after his wife.
Honestly, he doesn't have to support me. I'm not asking for support. I want the people's support.
Do you continue to pledge whoever the Republican nominee is?
No, I don't anymore. Look,
you don't?
No, we'll see who it is.
You won't promise to support the Republican nominee?
And he was essentially saying the same thing. Let me just tell you, he doesn't have to support me. I have tremendous support right now from the people. I'm way over 2 million votes more than him. I have many, many more delegates than him. I like many, many more delegates. As I said before, you know, he was talking about his great victory the night Utah. Well, I won Arizona, many more delegates, many, many more delegates. I don't really want him to do something he's not comfortable with. Just like I can't imagine Jeb Bush. Look, I beat these people badly. I beat Jeb Bush. I beat the governor of the state. The governor of the state came in. He was favored to win. He was at 22 points. Then he said something bad about me, and I hit him very hard, and he went boom. And he left the race. He was just very early.
I'm clear,
I don't want to make people uncomfortable. I don't need their support. Now, maybe it'll be a negative. Maybe it won't.
So the pledge you took is null and void. The idea of supporting whoever the Republican nominee is, you say you will no longer guarantee that you will support the Republican nominee.
I have been treated very unfairly. Look, I won the state of Missouri, right? No, I have. Cruise people. I've been treated very unfairly. I'll give you an example.
Unfairly by who?
I think by basically the RNC, the Republican Party, the establishment. You have a guy like Mitt Romney who lost miserably, who did a terrible job. He ran a horrible, horrible campaign. The last month of that, I helped him. I raised him $1 million.
Do you think the RNC is plotting this away from you at the convention?
I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll see what happens, but I think you'd have a lot of very upset people if that happened. Just so you understand. When Romney came out against me, he ran one of the worst races in the history of presidential politics. He ought to sit back and root for us instead of being a negative force. And we have, you know, others also. I'm bringing millions. The biggest story in all of politics worldwide right now, and I think you might agree to this, is what's happened. Millions of people are coming in and voting. In all fairness, for me.
And watching and being involved
in
the process.
And watching and all of this. Your ratings tonight will be excellent, right? The debate you had were 23 million people. I don't want to say this braggingly. I'm just telling you, if I weren't in it,
so
you would have had
your decision,
what, 4 million people?
In the off chance that you're not the Republican nominee, what would go into your decision of whether or not you would support the Republican
nominee?
I'll see
who it is. I mean, I'm not looking to hurt anybody. I love the Republican Party.
If it was Senator Ted Cruz, would you support that?
Look, here's my thing on Chris. A lot of nasty things have been said. I'm a very honorable guy, and I'm a very honest guy. I would have never done what he did to Ben Carson, who, by the way, endorsed me. I would have never gone to Iowa and said, Ben Carson has left the race. He is gone, 100%. Vote for me. And they usher people into the caucus and they try and get him to vote for Ted Cruz. A lot of people left Ben Carson. Ben Carson's an honorable guy. That was a terrible thing to do. There were other terrible things to do. And I honestly watched him tonight with you, and I watched how tormented he was when you asked him that question. I don't want to have him torment. I don't want to have him be tormented. Let me just tell you, I don't want his support. I don't need his support. I want him to be comfortable. Now, if he wants to support me, that'd be wonderful, because I think I'm going to win. But let me just tell you, I watched him, you know, skirt around like any politician would, skirt around the issue. I don't want to make people like Jeb Bush, like Ted Cruz, like Governor Walker. I mean, Governor Walker, I hit him very hard after he hit me, but I hit him very hard, and I drove him out of the race. I drove Jeb Bush out of the race. I drove Rand Paul out of the race. I understand why they don't like me, and I don't want people that... I don't want people to do something against their will, Anderson. I could see that he was having a hard time with a very simple question that you asked him. Would you support? Well, I think I'm going to win. Okay, he doesn't have to do it. He doesn't have to support me. I really don't believe I need his support. I'd love to have everybody's support. You know what? I'm a unifier. Believe it or not, I'm a unifier.
If there was a contested convention...
Someday you will see that.
If there was a contested convention and you didn't get the nomination and someone else was brought in, Paul Ryan, for instance, would you support...
Well, let me explain. So he was very nice. He called me the other day last week, and he was very nice. But then I read reports that he's having meetings with people about, you know, some clandestine things. Let's see what happens. But he was very nice when he called, and I assume he's being straight with me. I hope he's being straight with me, because what he said was very appropriate. I'm the front runner by a lot. I'm beating Ted Cruz by millions of votes, millions of votes. The Republican Party is doing, it's a phenomena. And this was not going to happen with the Republican Party. People that never voted before, Democrats and independents, are pouring in and voting
in Louisiana,
for me.
In Louisiana, you won.
I won.
But Ted Cruz
to show
got,
you how
Ted
corrupt
Cruz
the system
got more delegates,
is.
You threatened to sue.
I won. Well, I'm going to see. I mean, I never heard of that before. You know, I'm an American. If you
but
win an election, you're supposed to
isn't that just sour grapes? Didn't
no.
he just have, he just
no,
out
no, let me
worked
tell you,
you on the ground
no,
and
no,
getting
no,
delegates?
Said, well, look, in Missouri, it was just announced I won. I figured, in fact, they actually found that after a tabulation that I got 300 and some odd more votes than I had the first time, which is, you know, after 2 weeks or 3 weeks of tabulation, which gives me another 12 or 13 delegates. It was just announced a little while ago, just before I won of the year. I will say this, Louisiana. I went to Louisiana. I have a great relationship with the people of Louisiana. They're great people. I won the election. I was down there the night before. We had an airplane hangar. You wouldn't believe it, packed with people screaming. I won the election. And then it's all about the delegates. So I won. And then I find out that I got 10 votes less, 10 delegates less than the guy who lost. I beat him.
But
did, rather
but
easily.
But those are the rules. I mean, his campaign had
well,
a better ground
rules.
Game
okay.
in Louisiana.
I don't know. I don't think I don't call it a ground game. I call it
they were
bad
able to get
politics.
More delegates.
I call it bad politics. When somebody goes in and wins the election and gets less
okay.
delegates than the guy that lost, I don't think that's right.
All right. I want you to meet Jim Zizer. He's the CEO of a valve manufacturing company that's been in the family for three generations. He says he's undecided. He's leaning in your favor. Jim.
Thank you. Good. That's what I like to hear.
Hello, Mr. Trump. As a world leader or any leader, you need compassion
yeah.
and a willingness to make compromises. Can you give me an example of a time you have learned from your behavior and changed the way you have done something going forward?
Yeah. I am somebody, Jim, thank you. I am somebody that believes in flexibility. And if you notice, Ted Cruz and mostly him, he says, he will change, he will negotiate, he will this. Look. You don't have to stand on the floor of the United States Senate for a day and a half and rant and rave while all the other senators are laughing at you. And by the way, not endorsing him. Senator Jeff Sessions, one of the most respected men in the Senate, endorsed me. And frankly, he's a great man. And by the way, Jeff Sessions is a great man with great, great knowledge. And Ted Cruz thought he was going to get that endorsement. He would speak about Jeff Sessions all the time. Then Jeff Sessions came out and endorsed me. You need flexibility. And I talk about it all the time. You need to be able to negotiate great deals. You know, it's not all about signing executive orders, because this is something that came in. That wasn't the way our founders thought that this country was going to win. You have to get, now, I'll make great deals. I'll make conservative deals. I'm going to make wonderful deals. But you have to do it the old-fashioned way, like Ronald Reagan did with Tip O'Neill.
Do you have a specific, though, for him on a specific example that you've changed your behavior, changed the way you've done something going forward, or learned from something you've done that you didn't like the way it turned out?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I have many, many things that I've done. I have many things that I've changed course on. I mean, I've changed course on many, many things.
Any specifics?
Well, I mean, you could say I am, as you know, I'm pro-life, and I was originally pro-choice. I will say this, that as a developer and as a businessman, I'm not sure I was ever even asked the question, are you pro-life, pro-choice? And it was not something that, as one of the magazines recently said, Donald Trump is a world-class businessman. He was never asked those questions before. But, you know, if I was asked those questions years ago, it's something I never really gave much thought to. But I've made certain changes. I have evolved. I talk about evolving all the time.
I want to follow up.
And by the way, you know who else evolved? Is Ronald Reagan evolved. Because Ronald Reagan signed one of the toughest abortion laws, you know, in favor of abortion in California, that have been signed in many, many years. And yet he was a great president and a pretty conservative. He wasn't very conservative, but he was a pretty conservative president.
You said on the radio right here in Wisconsin the other day that you do apologize and you believe in apologizing. When was the last time you actually apologized for something?
Oh, wow. No, I do believe. I don't know. I'll think. Can I think? But look, I do believe in apologizing if you're wrong. But if you're not wrong, I don't believe in apologizing. For instance, I could have apologized. You brought up, we started this with Corey, my campaign manager. Will you apologize? I said, apologize for what? I see the tape. Apologize for what? I'd love to apologize. It would be so much easier. Apologize, Corey, you're fired.
But you don't know any specific example that you apologize.
Apologize. I apologized to my mother years ago for using foul language. I apologize to my wife for not being presidential on occasion. She's always saying, darling, be more presidential.
She told me she's talked to you about that.
No, she does, because she thinks I'm very presidential. The last debate, and by the way, Cruz talks about, I don't want to date. I debated this guy like
11 or 12 times.
She didn't
like you reusing the word, a dirty word or a bad word, I guess. I sound like a 12-year-old.
She doesn't like even a little bit.
That somebody in your audience shouted out and you repeated. She didn't like that.
Oh, she didn't like that. And really, it was just a repeat, but that didn't work out too well. No, she didn't. Repeats don't work either. And it wasn't a horrible.
What is it with you? Like, repeats and retweets don't count.
You know, do you ever notice? My biggest problems are repeats and retweets. I don't get in problem with what I say. It's when I repeat.
Well, maybe that's one of those things you should learn from your behavior and not retweet things.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I think so.
Okay. That is CNN's star anchor, Anderson Cooper, conducting a very, very deep and intellectual conversation and interview with the equally very deep and intellectual Donald Trump, the presumptive front runner of the Republican Party, and who is in a very good position to be our next president. You see what I mean? This is what we have. This is what we've got. He is the leader on the Republican side, and we've dealt several times with the leader, the presumptive winner and leader, because they already pronounced them. The media have already pronounced them the leaders, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Why? Because that's the matchup they'd like to see. So they engineered it, and it's going to probably happen that way. So all of this to come to the nut of the question, what are you going to do? What do you do? You aid and abet the rise of the cacistocrats? Or do you do something else? Right after this break, we'll find out what you think at 888-874-4888. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, and we're talking about this moment in time, this historical moment in time, basically feeding off of election 2016, the rise of the worst possible people who actually have a serious shot at being president of the United States. I mean, a whole crop of them. And you don't know what, how could this possibly happen? How do you produce a bumper crop of the worst possible people who could step forward and yet be supported in their quest to be president of the United States with your votes? So we have to rethink this whole process of voting, it seems to me. You got to figure out what is the point of voting? What is your vote supposed to be and do? And is this what you envisioned or what you still do envision with the vote? Is this what you expected your vote should be used for? In this election, therefore, looking at what we've got, and I mean, this is serious. What is serious is that these people have a very, very good chance not only in the 2016 election, but there's the aftermath. Right after the 2016 election, no matter who wins, the losers will surface again. Like VD, they just wouldn't go away. They're going to be around forever. They're going to come back at us. What do we do to stop the rise of the cacistocrats? Ed from Queens, what are your ideas?
How are you? Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, Ed. How are you?
Yeah, I'm fine. Basically, you know, this is probably, my opinion, the most pathetic showing for any type of electoral process that this country has had since I've been alive, and I'm in my 40s. So, I mean, I'm a firm believer in exercising the franchise. Even if you vote, you should vote your conscience and your heart, Green Party. But if voting is only one small part of the whole, and if specifically the African-American community had continued with what was happening in the 60s and came up with more dynamic movements and revitalizing the movement, we wouldn't have this. This is part and parcel the media's fault, but it's also our fault because we've allowed ourselves to become dumbed down to the process. I mean, when you have an individual like Donald Trump and an individual like Hillary Clinton and even an individual like Bernie Sanders, when you really look at their records, when you really look at what they stand for, I'm like Helen Caldicott. She always said, personalities, all of that, how you feel about a person doesn't matter. It's the record, the record, the record. What have they done and what are they doing? And these people have some of the most, excuse my language, piss poor record for the people that you have ever seen. And the only way to stop this, and it's going to be a long process, got to be a process of political education. The reason why most African Americans in the South voted for Hillary Clinton, because they're under the illusion that the Clintons are good for black people. I mean, you know the running joke. He was the first black president because he eats fried chicken and played the saxophone. I mean, come on, you know. We've got to grow up and become politically mature. We've got to look at these people's records, and we've got to form movements, broad-based coalitions, that will actually undermine what's going on. You understand what I'm saying? If we don't do that, then we won't have anything.
But, Ed, the time is now. It is going to be a done deal in November. What do you propose? I understand your point, and I appreciate it, and I agree. But are you also indicating that we should be prepared that nothing real is going to happen in November that would do what you ask us to do, which is to stop it?
I'm a mechanic by trade, and I work on systems. I work on heating systems, air conditioning systems. I'm a general mechanic. I've got a degree in it. And it comes a point when you come to look at a system, and that system is obsolete. There's nothing you can do for it anymore. You can't repair it. You can't replace a part. It would be what the terminology is, throwing good money after bad. I think you're just going to have to eat it. I mean, I vote your conscience. We're going to have to eat it because I don't see any way in repairing this. I don't see anything that we can do in the immediate term to repair it. We're just going to have to eat it. Now is the time to hunker down, to get people politically educated, to work on movement building. Concentrate on your local government as far as being a rank and file person, because your local government is where you can feel the most effect of your work. And you got to do like the Tea Party did. The Tea Party didn't happen in a vacuum. They started taking over local offices, dog catcher, councilmen, assemblymen, mayor. And then before you know it, the local politics reflected the national politics. And that's what we have to do as progressives. That's what we have to do as African-Americans. We have to. And sometimes you got to eat it. Sometimes you just got to eat it, especially when you part and parcel contributed to the circumstances that creates this foolishness.
Thank you for your instruction. That's great, great insight there, Ed. Thank you so much. Mitch from New York, what do you think about the problems that we have on our hands?
Well, good afternoon, Trace.
Good afternoon.
You?
Thank you.
Good, thank you.
You too.
I'm kind of confused because if you look at, my mother always said, an apple never falls far from the tree. And if you look at the beginning of this country, all of those called, what do they call them, founding fathers, they were terrible people. Rapists, murderers, and thieves. And you go all the way down the line, all of those people that were presidents were terrible people. Lincoln, while he was freeing the slaves, so he called with his emancipation, he was hanging the native people out in the West. Johnson, all of these guys were murderers, rapists, and thieves, big-time murderers. Johnson went into Vietnam, killed up millions of people. You know, look at this guy, Clinton, you know, killed up millions of people. And he says, I'm sorry for doing it. So why are we so bent out of shape with Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? They're just following the same line as the guys has been in there. Now, if we buy into the dream, that's what it is, a dream of the of being or getting your slice of the pie, the American system, then you're fooling yourselves, because these people are just following suit to what this country was founded on, atrocities against people.
Okay, that established. What is your recommendation for this year, this presidential year?
I don't know. I'm just keeping my, you know, like if I can, I'll vote for Bernie Sanders as he goes along, because he seems to be talking in a direction that I think the country should be. You know, but for Hillary Clinton, I can't do that. You know, I really can't.
Yeah, but we have discussed on this program, Mitch, that the question is, I mean, Bernie Sanders still has a question to answer, and that is, what is he going to do with these millions of votes that he's getting? And we know that he has already pledged that whoever the nominee is from the Democratic Party, and it could only be one, that would be Hillary, because there's just two of them running at this point, that he would basically support her. So are you not engaging? The question is, I'm not just asking, are you engaging in an exercise of futility by casting your vote with Bernie Sanders if, in fact, Sanders intends to support Hillary Clinton, if he should not get the nomination?
No, if he goes in that direction, then I'll have to reconsider my vote for him, too. You know, but I think that's what he's going to do, because he's never said that he wouldn't. You know, he's a person that I don't know. He don't want to be ousted out by the rest of his colleagues, I would say. You know,
so Mitch, what is a vote supposed to be and do from your perspective?
What is it supposed to do?
And what is it supposed to be?
Well, you know, theoretically, it's supposed to represent your voice in being government. They call it being part of a democracy, if you want to go in that direction. That's what they say it is, but we all know it isn't. You know, we all, you know, if it was that way, then people would, a popular vote would designate who is going to be the president, you know, but you're not elected by the popular vote, you know. So, yeah, it's saying that you are a part of this system. You are a part of this democratic system, if you want to call it that, by casting your vote for this person.
All right. But, thank you so much for your contribution today, Chris.
All right,
thank you. Mitch, sorry. Ryan from Long Island. What is the dilemma as you see it?
It depends on your perspective on how you would even quantify as a dilemma. I wouldn't quantify as a dilemma per se. There's several gifts that continue to give on giving. And there's the one gift that keeps on giving is the fact that this is a perpetual distraction. The body politic and the political agenda and this campaign for the White House as the President of the United States, it doesn't truly matter who's there, once again. And we're stuck on these votes that Bernie Sanders will get. I mean, he'll be...
We're talking about the rise of the cacistocrats, the rise of the worst possible people who are serious contenders for the White House. And what does that mean to the value of the vote and the exercise of the vote?
Oh, it definitely, that to me is not a dilemma. That to me is an eye-opener and calls it us to reflect and to put the spotlight on the very word vote and the very practice of voting, which doesn't have anything to do with controlling the structures in our system or how we live. If you look at that definition of vote, the definition of a vote in dictionary of Bouvier or Black Law's dictionary, the word vote means take a vow or a plea. And we've already been pre-selected for a particular candidate for our vote. So we should look into etymology, what the word vote means in the first place. What actually is the citizen doing by casting a vote? So secondly, these degrading bottom feeders, low-caliber candidates, as you refer to them, they're low-caliber, it's only a reflection of our modern culture. Look at what we're doing with our children. Is Kim Kardashian, is she breaking up with Kanye, or is Kim Kardashian, cooking some cookies with her sister Khloe, and they're lying about that they're actually cooking their cookies and they're baking cakes and pies and all these things and plagiarizing others? I mean, it's ridiculous. We have tons of people who are of authority who see that something severely is going on, but how can I describe it? It is more proof of a pudding, and the counterculture establishment has exposed it for what it is. It's a truly an indictment of the United States company corporation, and it's truly an indictment of their administrative policies. It's truly an indictment of the entire structure, where people have classified it as being a system. It's not truly a system because it's not helping the people. Your circulatory system in your body helps you out. Your cardiovascular system in your body helps you out. These are not systems benefiting the people. They are more mechanized institutions with an agenda upon other agendas.
So what is the best way to confront this system? What do you do with this? You still have the power of the so-called vote. What do you do with it?
I'll tell you, but it might be mind-blowing. May I tell you? It may be mind-blowing for your listening audience. And that is this. Bernie Sanders is the one who has millions and millions of votes. He can just simply declare that to the international arenas, to the world stage, and there's several world stages, There's several world courts, there's several international courts, and there's several international body governing systems. And say, look, I'm Bernie Sanders. I have this agenda. This is my mission statement. This is my position. And I have all these votes of people who are the so-called citizens of the United States. Historically, we have been getting stopgapped, victimized. Historically, we've been going under administrative slavery in law based on the statutes of law and our congressional records. So into the international arena, I've declared these citizens who voted for me to be outside of this system, this current system that causes so much confusion and slavery and misinformation and puts people into a taxation policy that is enforced by the barrel of a gun. he can go to these international arenas and declare these to be outside the system and to be recognized as a separate nation from what's going on within this nation.
He's not at all going to even attempt any of what you just said. Thank you so much for your call today.
It's completely extreme. But what else can you do? But if you want to adjust to the system, be my guest. But you can't fix a system that's meant to destroy you.
Thank you very much for your call today. From Philadelphia, Clara, you're on the air.
Hello. I hope everything's going well. It isn't, fine. I know, but personally, I hope it is.
But thank you.
I wanted to say that my thoughts on it are this. What can we do? I know it's an old theme for me. The best thing we can do now is focus on our own welfare, our family, our community. I think, we're on a train now, politically, socially, and culturally, that's out of control, headed for disaster. Disaster in one way is negative, in another way it's positive. That's why I believe that if Donald Trump becomes a president, the system will more rapidly collapse. And that's my greatest hope. There's nothing we can do about this system. It's rotten to the core. But a new system, a new way of life will come out of disaster. It's not an immediate fix. It's taken, how long has this country been in? About 400 years for all this, or more, for all this to develop. And you're saying, and many people are saying, that this crop of people are the worst. We know now. We have TV. We have the internet. The masks are off. Masks are off. It's not that these people are necessarily any worse than any of the others. They don't know how to act. They don't know their parts. The other people knew how to act and deceive us more readily. Donald Trump, in my opinion, is a male version without a mask of Hillary Clinton. She's more dangerous than he is because he's right out there, and things will happen fast under his regime. That's the way I see it. And as far as black people and poor people of other races are concerned, we need to understand that nobody cares about us, but we must care more and more about ourselves and one another. I think one of the greatest fears of this system is that black people and poor white people would finally come together and resist as a unit.
Well, thank you.
So I say stay home.
Stay home. Thank you very much. Michael from New Jersey, what are your thoughts about the imminent new order of kekistocracy, government by the worst possible element?
Well, it seems to be upon us.
Yes, it does.
And what can we do about it? Bernie has a plank of, he's the most specific in having an agenda. The other candidates are just saying, trust me, I'll do what you want, just elect me. But they don't, nobody's committing to a $15 minimum wage like Bernie is. Nobody's committing to Medicare for all, universal health care, a green policy for renewable energy, student debt. They all make generalized statements about this because it seems to be popular. But Bernie's the only one who has a specific agenda. So I'm going to vote for Bernie in the primary. Now, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because whatever he does, it'll indicate that he had a popular program to the extent of the votes he gets, and he's getting a lot of votes. Then, if he turns it over, if he capitulates, I happened to see Susan Sarandon, the actress, and she was on with one of the newscasters, And the newscaster who was on CNBC was trying to get her to capitulate. I said, well, you know, Bernie's not going to get elected, and aren't you going to just throw your support to, you know, she's a woman, to, and she said no. And she was very, very specific on saying that, you know, the status quo is not going to work, and, you know, it's just no good. There's going to be a revolution. So Bernie says he represents it. He's like halfway there or three quarters of the way there, but he's got these specific programs. So I think, you know, social movements in America have done much more than voting for these individuals. But as I said before, the democracy is only as good as the people in the country that has democracy. And if they're not educated, if they don't understand their own consciousness and how they're influenced, you're going to get the same thing. Supposing we just had everything by referendum, which is, I consider, like a direct democracy, and they say, well, vote for, does everybody want the $15 minimum wage? You think so, right? You think that they don't want GMOs in their food. But they're influenced by corporations who have a lot of money that says, if we have a $15 minimum wage, you, Mr. Jones, are going to lose your job because our economy is going to collapse. So they're going to influence, and out of fear, even in a direct democracy like that, people have to be, so you have to free the individual from the environment and from the influence in order for him to make an intelligent choice.
But I have to ask you, Michael.
Yes.
In the current situation, has it brought you to the point of asking yourself, what is this thing called voting? What is it supposed to? Why should I even continue with this process?
Yes, because it's a farce, you know. It's really a farce. Because first of all, you don't know what you're electing. I'm much more in favor of referendums, voting, you know, for a specific thing, like vote for universal health care, vote for minimum wage, and bring it directly to the people for them to vote for. But they have to be educated, and they have to be unafraid. You know, they have to deal with. You have to understand that fear is a major determinant in what goes on. But if you vote for these individuals, it's a farce because, you know, Hillary Clinton smiles and shakes her head, yes, 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 and then she goes and does what she wants, what the people she took money from directed her to do. So she doesn't commit to a minimum wage of $15 an hour. Why not? Shame her. So I think if she gets into office, which seems inevitable, that we should just go out on the mall of the Washington, D.C. with millions of people and don't do as they did 50 years ago and ask for jobs and freedom, because the freedom that somebody gives you is not freedom, and the jobs are going to be at Walmart and McDonald's. Ask for things that actually give you security. Ask for a $15 minimum wage. Don't ask for jobs because you could lose your job. Ask for a $15 minimum wage and a job if you want it. Ask for Medicare for all. Ask for student debt to be repaid or whatever or done something with. Ask for money to go to infrastructure. Demand that that we get rid of nuclear weapons and demilitarize, and go down the list and ask for these things. Don't ask for a politician that's not going to give you anything but what the friends of the politician want for their best interests.
So this election cycle, what are you going to do? Are you voting?
I'm going to vote
voting
for Bernie in the primaries because I believe
you did
in
say
the,
that you're voting for Bernie in the primaries.
Right, and now if he doesn't overcome and get the election, if he's not up for candidacy, then I think I would support people going to Washington and getting some of these things Bernie talked about and getting rid of some of the things that he wouldn't do, like, you know, getting rid of demilitarizing and deproliferizing, you know, nuclear weapons and banning them, et cetera. So I think people should go to Washington like they did in the anti-war movement. And I don't know if they should ask for everything at once or just go each time, get millions of people to go and ask for a $15 minimum wage. If you can push that through by shaming the politicians, by constantly putting the pressure from outside of the political system, then you go the next time you ask for universal health care, Medicare for all, and you go down
then,
the list.
Then why bother with elections in the first place? I mean, this is a point. Why bother with elections if the work inevitably comes back to the people to make all these corrections and all the of these advances? Why bother with this whole process?
It's an impediment. I agree. It's an impediment to the will of to the welfare of the people.
Thanks a lot for your call today, Michael. Thanks for contributing. Thanks, everyone, for contributing. But that brings us to the end of our program today. And it's something worth considering. Is this the best that we've got? And if it's the best that has been produced so far, do you need to support it? Should you find something else to do? And what would that something else be? We'll continue the conversation. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you and what you think about the program. And always know from me what a pleasure it is and a great privilege it is to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.